BoldPatentsVIP.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Bold Patent Show. I am your host, J.D. Hoovener, owner and founder here at Bold Patents Law Firm. And I'm here with my trusty co-host, Matt Kolseth. Matt is our go-to trademark attorney here at Bold. And we have a great show today. I'm super stoked. We've got a wonderful guest, another attorney. Okay, yeah, don't get bored yet. This is more than an attorney. This is high tech. His initials are AI. Yeah, and he does advise clients in artificial intelligence. I'm going to keep him backstage, keep you, on the edge of your seat here for just a few more minutes. We are live across Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. So if we do have any live questions, people have any questions, do put those right into the comments. Don't be shy. No question too simple. We'll get to it and make sure we answer it best we can. We have four preloaded questions from Avla that came in this week, three cool. patents and one trademark. So if we don't get any questions from you folks out there on live, we'll go to those preloaded ones to get our Avla audience taken care of. We'll do a quick segment here, 10 to 15 minutes with our guest, and then we will, as always, do a Shark Tank Bite. I found a really cool one related to artificial intelligence, which made me laugh out loud. So hopefully you guys will enjoy the pitch. And then we'll critique it and comment on it. By the way, quickly on that, last week we had a copyright strike. Someone's tried coming after us, and I was like, oh, no, this is fair use. And they realized that we're a law firm, and so they quickly backed down on that. Anyway, happy to have our guest on. So I'm going to bring him on. Afam, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Thank you for having me.
Very welcome. It's a pleasure. And, you know, Afam, you and I just actually met earlier. Was it this week or last week?
Yes.
I was like, I got to get you on the show. Tell us a little about your background. Everybody knows that. How did you get started into the high tech industry?
Yes. So initially in undergrad, I went into computer engineering, but I didn't want to be put into a box. I always felt that I was called to a higher calling. And as I went along my journey of education, I found law. And I decided to go to law school, but I still had my focus on technology. So as an attorney, now I utilize my past technical background to advise clients on emerging technologies.
Wonderful. And you'd spent, you didn't run out of law school. You didn't open up your practice right away. Tell us about what you were doing before that.
Yes. So right out of law school, I worked in-house for a small technology company. I handled a lot of intellectual property matters and business matters, mostly related to trademarks and and after that, I decided to open my own law firm. And from there, I've been practicing my own law firm for about 8 months, and I'm looking forward to hitting that year mark and going forward from there.
Wonderful. Yes. I mean, when you said trademarks, when Matt talks about trademarks, he's like, that is the business. What do you mean? Yeah. When you go to when the rubber meets the road, what do you own? You own your darn brand. So you got to get that right. Matt, any further comments or echoing of that?
No. I'm excited to chat with you today. I mean, it sounds like you have a ton of great experience.
Yes. Afam, let's get into, this topic that is just blowing up: artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, Google Bard, for heaven's sakes, all these different things. It kind of feels like someone told me this. It's like, I'm going to mess this up. ChatGPT is like the Netscape Navigator, right, of the 1995. We're at the beginning, right? So lay it all out for us. What should we be thinking about in respect to AI? Where's the future of that? And maybe kind of tie it back into legal, right? What are some of the legal privacy issues at hand?
Of course. Well, artificial intelligence is not regulated right now, and a lot of inventors and new startups are utilizing that for their businesses. As far as ChatGPT is concerned, there's a lot of legal issues that arise when utilizing ChatGPT. ChatGPT uses generative AI. It collects data sets and uses chat functions to output any answer that somebody may have when they enter a prompt. and certain issues that underlie is mainly privacy issues, because it doesn't, you a user could put in personal information, private information that is seen by someone on the back end of ChatGPT using OpenAI. And with that, that also brings in more concerns as far as intellectual property, like who owns something that is produced by AI? And then if they own it, then how can somebody receive certain royalty payments or capitalize on it without losing their, without losing anything that they actually own? There's a, it's in a variety of industries, from music, healthcare, finance. So it's very big and it's very new, but I'm one of the new attorneys to help at least guide certain businesses and individuals to protect their private information and also protect their intellectual property.
Right. And so what are some of the questions that you're fielding? I mean, let me just, I'll be kind of call it a novice AI user. Hey, I'm going to go use, I'm going to go write all my blog articles, and I'm going to post 100% AI generated material on my blog. Anything to worry about?
Yes. The Copyright Office in March released some guidance as far as what human authorship is as well in relation to AI. And it says that if a majority of a work is based off of human authorship, then that work is allowed to be copyrightable. However, if someone uses AI 100% to generate something, well, then they don't really own that copyright because it's the AI that actually created it, not the actual human. So there's going to be a test. So far for me, there's no guideline, but the Copyright Office is looking for certain stakeholders and attorneys, legal experts to provide some guidance on what human authorship is. And one of the main criteria is that, okay, so how do we know how somebody used a prompt to generate?
Right.
So that's one of the key issues that we are trying to figure out as attorneys and just creators.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
can I jump in really quick and ask a question about this?
For sure.
So have you gone through the copyright process with a client whose, you know, creative work involved AI in some fashion? And if so, like, how do you, what do you claim in that copyright versus, you know, what AI created, right? How do you differentiate that for the Copyright Office, or don't you at this point?
In my line of work, I have not reached that issue yet, but it's still unclear. There's no, it's all a case-by-case basis. There's no clear guidelines on how to determine human authorship for AI-generated works.
Interesting. Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, and there's, I forget exactly what I was reading, something along the lines of, oh, this is a terrible example, but it was, somebody said they were trying to use, do a specific query, right? And the, I use either ChatGPT or Google Bard, and the results were something along the lines of, cannot provide the answer because the answer is copyright protected. Does that ring a bell? Does that sound at all familiar?
It doesn't sound familiar, but I understand the concept behind it. The person behind, I don't know if it was Google Bard or ChatGPT, but the person behind the code, they add protections. For example, you can't look up anything regarding violence, but as far as work that's already copyrighted, that's another new addition that these generative AI or chatbots use to protect other people's intellectual property.
Right.
Yeah. So you have to enter that code in on the back end just to protect a certain person's intellectual property. And also, even when some people use ChatGPT, you have to do your own research. It's not the end all be all of your source of information. You have to actually seek out the verified information, because sometimes it may be it's not all true.
Right, right. And on the patent side, there was a case recently. Supreme Court denied certiorari. They're an uphold a federal court decision that said inventors have to be human too. Where this patent was put together completely by artificial intelligence, related to a novel method. Basically the Supreme Court has said, yes, you must be a human. AI cannot be the named inventor. So there must be human involvement. So they're kind of following suit. They did cite to that case that I think you were alluding to on the copyright side. Okay, let's go toward, sort of the future, if you will. What are some of the businesses that may be most impacted by some of this, more interest or attention being drawn to AI?
Of course. So with AI, certain menial tasks that involve repetitive tasks that can be streamlined by AI. For example, the blog post, somebody writing a blog post. We saw an example with BuzzFeed where they had a lot of layoffs, and that's going to happen more into the near future because of artificial intelligence replacing humans to increase both efficiency, the end product, and as well as the and increased profits. So those are the concerns that businesses have, and moving forward, they're going to be replacing humans with artificial intelligence, whether it be from on a computer using ChatGPT or actual machines. Now, what businesses now need to keep in mind is that they need to adapt to this new change of artificial intelligence. The main question is how. So now businesses should keep that in mind when they're looking at future projections of how they can grow their business.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. I want to make sure that our live viewers out there, I just got a handful. Ask away any questions you've got of Afam or myself related to artificial intelligence and tech law. Raise those now. This is your time to do so. I want to provide a quick link if you wanted to have a conversation, a confidential discussion with Matt or I. That's your link there to do so. Afam, one other area of practice that I know you focus on is privacy. Let's talk about that, kind of that in between, privacy law. And sort of this tech law, what are some things that most any startup outside of AI should be thinking about now with respect to privacy law?
Of course. So we're in the age of information where a lot of businesses are collecting consumer data to help understand the market and help better tailor their products or services to those particular consumers. But what businesses should keep in mind is that they should also have data. They have their data, but also implement cybersecurity measures to protect that data. And with AI, there's going to be an influx of data that a company has in their portfolio that they need to both manage and protect. So that's a key point to keep in mind. And it's best to have strong data privacy policies. And the United States doesn't have a federal regulation right now. It's mostly state by state.
Right.
I'm hoping that the United States can implement a federal data privacy rule regulation. That way we can be able to better understand how we can protect consumer data.
Totally. Yeah, it just seems in this world we've got, we're all, it's interstate. If not international, immediately upon, selling or conducting business online. So I agree. I think we're all waiting for that. We had a live question here from Edward. Good afternoon. He says, I have an invention. I found a patent that has the same concept, but have a different design than the one he's seen. What will I still be able to get that patented? It is possible. It is all about that difference, that delta, I would say, Edward. in what is what's called prior art, the fancy word for any published document, published information, or a previous patent. If you have that differential, something that is unique and is non-obvious, is the other second part of that equation, it is potentially patentable. So I would click that link above, schedule some time with us. We can have a detailed discussion about what you've come up with. Even subtle improvements can be awarded patents. The bigger question, I think, and more important one for you as the inventor and potential business owner, is there enough market demand, right? Is there enough opportunity out there to go after and achieve at least returning your investment in acquiring the patent asset, but go well beyond that? So what's the business plan behind it? Is there enough demand even for that small or even incremental improvement? Okay, what I'm going to do here is, Afam, if you're willing to, I would like to share your email address for any of the viewers we have. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Okay, and I did share Afam's website above. So email him. That's afam at aiolegal.com, and he'll answer any questions above and beyond what we didn't get to today. Afam, I want to keep you on with us. We're going to go to our next segment covering the Shark Tank Bold Bite. And we'll be critiquing a artificial intelligence solution that was proposed about a year ago. So I'm going to switch over. So thanks again. If we don't get to talk with you, I appreciate you coming on to our show today. All right, so switch this on. All right, and we should switch. Okay.
Next up is what.
How's the audio?
Great.
We're good.
Noah believes is the best way to maximize your time.
I don't see anything. Well, it was just my angle.
Well, this is riveting.
I got it from here, thank you. Hi, Sharks. My name's Peter. I'm a software engineer from York, Maine. And I'm here today seeking $150,000 in exchange for 20% of my company, Bueller. But what is Bueller? Well, it's the first and only product of its type. And essentially what we do is allow our users to be in two places at once or more. Anytime you have conflicting obligations, me, for example, I like to sleep in, but I did have to be here today. Well, I can use Bueller. Bueller is the application that attends online meetings for you. That's right, it's the first and only product of its type. To date, we've helped tens of thousands of people around the globe avoid those tedious online meetings where you kind of have to go, but at the same time, you really don't need to. It is very simple to use. Let me show you how it works. Once you've created an account on Bueller, click schedule a bot and then enter the meeting nickname, give it an ID and a password, copy and paste the meeting link, enter the days of the week you'd like Bueller to arrive, what time to arrive, and how long to stay for. From there, you can just upload a video of yourself pretending to pay attention, sipping your tea, having a good time. And then you're all set. Once you hit complete, you don't need to leave your computer open. You don't need to leave your laptop running or anything like that. All your online meetings are attended through the cloud. So Sharks, who's ready to join me in helping the world to log off, sleep in, and be in two places at once?
I thought that's what that's it was awesome. Until you actually said it.
And this is from Ferris Bueller, right? Bueller. That's great.
I wish this was out when I was dating.
So I'm sleeping, but my, what do you call me virtually?
An avatar. Your persona. Avatar, yeah.
My persona is attending a meeting.
Right.
And Mark asks me a question.
Right.
I mean, I ignore him the first time. Mark thinks it's normal. Mm-hmm. He asks me again. I still ignore him. How does Mark not figure out it's not really me?
Right. Okay, so there's two things there that I'll say. The first is, right now, this is an MVP, right? Like, all it is a
MVP
static video.
MVP is minimal viable product.
It's a functioning minimal viable product with tens of thousands of users. But to address the question, I'm sorry, could you repeat it one more time? It was...
Well, what if someone asks you a question?
He's so used to not showing up, he doesn't even know the question.
Are you in another place right now?
You would be surprised, yeah. So, okay. Internet scalable, venture-backable moonshot idea. But we do have sales. The only reason we have sales is because after dropping out of school, I completely ran out of money when I was building it. Maxed out all my credit cards, had to move in with my mom.
Maybe you should have attended more of the classes.
Yeah, right? It's a good backup
plan. So how did you get sales?
So then when that happened, I started charging new users around $6.99 a month. We make right now about $1,000 a month.
Why not just charge a one-time fee of like $5?
That's a good point. I do like that idea though. I think that's...
It didn't cross your mind at all?
Well, no.
Revenue off this business. It's a bad idea. I'm out.
I appreciate it.
The app is great, but there's not a direct path to monetization.
The next iteration of the product would be a simple drag and drop flow of a decision builder where you still have pre-recorded videos, but now if you put basic language processing on top of that, or voice recognition.
Do you realize how expensive that is, though? I just don't see the path, Peter. I would go back to school because if you really want to win in this space, you got to know your AI better than everybody else.
That's fair.
Right?
That's
fair. Because you can't just depend on hiring a team because it's expensive. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's changing every single day. Otherwise, someone's just going to jump in
front of you. Say it, Mark. Say it.
I'm out.
That guy said, that is it. What are your thoughts there, Matt?
It's really creative. I can think of lots of different uses for that in my own personal life, but I like the idea. USPTO website's not working for me, so let me see if I can log in a different way here. But I think it's creative. I like it. I mean, it sounds like it's an app. So from like a trademark perspective, he's probably looking at a few different classes of goods and services, right? He's got the mobile app in class 9, software as a service class 42, probably some like online sales platform, right? Whether it's membership or, you know, one-time use fees, that sort of thing. So class 35. So I'll be curious to see kind of if they file the trademark.
Right. Well, and if someone were to come to you with that, you know, Bueller in terms of the software, it doesn't sound necessarily suggestive, but what would be your concerns? What's some of your critique?
Well, how did he spell it again?
B-U-E-L-L-E-R.
So my primary concern would be not like the Ferris Bueller.
Oh, sorry, just one L.
One L. So what I would typically do then is I'd have to do some research to figure out if that's actually a surname, right? So surnames generally are not registrable at the USPTO. So you have to do a search basically based on U.S. Census data from 2020, I think, and see if there's a significant population of individuals with the surname Bueller, you know, in the United States. And if that's the case, then we might have to consider, you know, a rebrand or filing a design mark to protect the logo elements of it. But yeah, right. Interesting.
Yep, I wasn't able to find any patent protection either. You know, when you're talking about software, you're going to be going after a method patent, and it doesn't always make sense. And the major issues you look at is reverse engineerability, even detectability, right? Is something like that going to be able to be caught if a competitor is using that exact process? So certainly a lot of trade secrets involved. And as we kind of skip around to make sure we couldn't watch the whole segment, but they did mention AI at some point in there. That may have been one way he'd like to improve upon that. I'm interested in hearing your take on it. What are some things that came to mind? You know, if this individual were to come to your office, what are some things that you might advise them to do?
It's not ready. Like the way he pitched it, it seems like there should be more to it because it can easily be replicated by another person, especially with how easy accessible artificial intelligence and people can learn programming. As far as like the end product, what is the goal? Because you're not attending meetings, you're skipping meetings. And if someone asks you a question and you can't answer it, like you need to implement some type of AI, that language AI, and I think he mentioned it, to actually respond. And then that goes into a whole entirely different area. It's a good idea, but it needs to be heavily improved on. It needs to get back to the drawing board.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a fun initial solution to kind of that specific need that he may have had at in a university setting. I finished all my schooling before the pandemic, but I could see that being a huge hit, maybe just for that specific reason, to show a moving body. But, you know, I think even schools and professors will catch on perhaps to a loop, you know, if it's not done well.
I will say this. When I use Zoom, I tried a similar feature like that. So I recorded myself just sitting still. And then I used that as my green screen on Zoom.
Oh, okay.
It's very similar to that, except I'm just there and that kind of looks like a robot. You see me blinking. But as far as answering questions or listening to the subject matter of the meeting or even class, it doesn't help with that. Like there should be more to it.
Yep. Very good. All right. Well, I do have a few minutes left. I want to field a few of these oval questions that came in. We'll take one patent one and then go over to trademark side. So this one is out of Jefferson City, Missouri. And the question is, how do I patent a soda flavor? And we get food inventions a lot. This is kind of a cool out of the box concept. I'll put this into the box here so everyone can see. So how do I patent a soda flavor? I came up with a soda mixture idea that would make tons of money as a summer edition. My question is, how do I go about patenting that idea and selling it to Coca-Cola? I definitely want to get credit and my part of the money. Okay, I love it. A new recipe is potentially patentable, but extremely difficult to do so. You've got to be able to prove to the patent office that that specific mixture of ingredients, that chemical composition is the first time it's ever been done, and that the flavor iteration is not an obvious change from anything else published before it. Huge, tall order to ask to get a true novel and non-obvious flavor, but it's not out of the question. It's not crazy. So David Boslin says, no patent. I like you, David. We are dealing with bold inventors, so we're pushing the limits, and I encourage you to at least have a hard look at it. Click on the link above, and we'll have a further chat, and I'll show some examples of just why it's challenging but not impossible to do just that. Matt, anything, and Alfam, anything to add to that answer?
I mean, from a patent perspective, you're the guy. So
yeah. Well, thank
no,
you.
No, I mean, yeah, trade secret comes to mind, right, from like a flavor profile perspective. That yes. Was fun. Yeah.
What's a famous one? I'm trying to remember. Yeah, Coca-Cola, right?
It starts with a C, I think. I don't remember. Yeah.
So they've had their trade secret now for over 100 years, well beyond the 20 years that patent protection can provide. So here it is, a trademark question in our last minute of the show. And we've got both of you guys, actually, with some trademark background. So this will be good. Let me plug this question into the box. They want to do a rebrand for as a music artist, their name. And the U.S., the word Vogue matched with my name. Oh, and with us in the word Vogue. James Vogue is the term, the wording they want to use. Is it legal to do that, or will the brand Vogue come after me?
Potentially, because of just the name Vogue and how big the brand is. I think with trademark and rebranding, when you rebrand, you have the potential to infringe on another trademark. So what you need to do is just to make sure that the name is very unique. You could probably change it up a little bit, or even change the design. You wouldn't be able to get this a standard mark, but you'd be able to potentially get a design that's different. That's all I have.
Yeah, I think that's right. I would, a couple things I would just add to it, right? It's going to be like a class 41 application for live entertainment, typically is where our creative like musicians will file. So it's gonna be class 41. So I don't know if Vogue has any like entertainment, like podcasts or anything like that, or video series, but they may not be in that class. So we might be able to get around like Vogue, right? They're certainly not, in my mind, a famous mark. So they're not going to get, you know, widespread, you know, protection from dilution and things like that. And then, you know, if the search came back clean and an attorney, trademark attorney said, yeah, it's, we're good to go for filing James, you know, Vogue, you'd have to file also an alias disclosure, right? So that, you know, James Vogue is my, you know, pseudonym or my alias, my stage name. And I, James, you know, fill in the blank, approve the trademark application.
Wonderful stuff, guys. We are at time. I want to thank all of our audience, our members that participated today. And, of course, thank our special guest, Afa Mokeke from AI Legal. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Glad to have you back here to talk more AI and tech law. Matt, thanks for being on and sharing with us and doing our critique, as always.
Yeah.
Afa Bold Patents and the whole team here. We wish you guys a wonderful day. We'll be here next week, Wednesday at 1:30 Pacific and 4:30 on the East Coast. Go big, go bold.
Go big, go bold at boldip.com.